1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Eddie Shway, police chief for Solvang and Buellton, and a candidate for sheriff. Thank you for being here, Eddie.
Thank you, Neil.
So, I didn't know there was a police chief of Solvang and Buellton. Is that because they're cities, but you're part of the sheriff's department? Can you explain that relationship?
Yeah, so we have contract cities, so... You know, when it's more economical for a city to contract out for law enforcement services, often it's the sheriff's offices that will contract for police services. So Buellton and Solvang are both incorporated cities.
So you're still part of the sheriff's department?
Yes.
So, you know, before we get into your candidacy, the thing about people in office, which I think... is really critical, and I wish more of Americans would take a hard look when they vote for people to be in any position of elected office, is their history. And a lot of your history has influenced a lot of the good things that you've done over the years. And can we go back and talk about your early years where you didn't know that who your biological father was?
That's true. Yeah, I didn't meet my biological father until I was almost 40.
And when you did, you discovered that he had some mental issues?
Yes. Yeah, he had suffered from some mental issues early in his life. He was actually homeless for a short time, living in Los Angeles, and my uncle had gone and found him and brought him to Washington State.
And did that, I assume, influence sort of your interest in mental health?
That, and I had other family members that also suffered from mental health issues. I had one very close relative that committed suicide later on in life. And actually, my mother had some other developmental disability issues as well.
And you chose law enforcement, and people tend to not think of someone who is interested in mental health as someone that would be attracted to law enforcement because it seems an anathema. But you went and became a law enforcement officer, but you kept that interest in mental health. And you did something about it besides keeping an interest. Like, I have an interest in it because I became a patient. but you actually did something about it, and you actually were involved in a not-for-profit on your own time. When you were working as a police officer, to help people with mental illness. Isn't that true?
Actually, the nonprofit I was involved in was actually a youth program that I did when I was a community resource deputy for the sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. And I founded a 501c3 and started the Sheriff's Activities League, which was...
Well, it's not that I don't want to admit a mistake, but I kind of relate the two. I think that when you're dealing with young people, particularly today, working with them on projects like you did has a great deal of influence on how they are able to cope with some of the real stressors today and avoid mental health problems. So I see a nexus between them. That's probably why I made that mistake. Today, it's even more difficult to be, I guess, a youth. You know, there are kids in this town, a lot of kids in this town that probably are afraid to, when they go home, their parents may not be home because of the changes in our immigration policy. Is that something that you've seen more of an issue today?
I think it is a big issue, and you hear about it. You hear about it every day, and you read about it every day, and you have families that are separated, which is very sad, and you have a fear in the community that if law enforcement is involved, they may have immigration called on them, and families may be separated, and I have heard many stories, especially through the journey I've had running for sheriff. I've had many people talk to me and tell me stories.
And we look at YouTube, we look at television, we see all of these, you know, very problematical encounters with police across the country. And one of the things that I read about you, which is sort of emblematic of this situation, is that you were saying back when you were trained, the rule was ask, tell, and make. Which is an aggressive way of dealing with possible perpetrators. And, you know, your, I guess, focus is on a different approach.
Yes, and that is still something we still teach in law enforcement is command and control and command presence. And officers do have to have command presence in certain situations, but we have to be able to have more tools in our belt to be able to deal with a diverse population. And some people do not do well with command and control. And you can escalate and cause an exigency yourself if you push people too far. So I started a program so we could teach officers how to de-escalate a situation. And in 2015, I started the Behavioral Sciences Unit. And it was a unit that I wanted to bring to the sheriff's office, and which would look at training for officers, giving officers more training on de-escalation, implicit bias, and how to better communicate with people who are suffering from mental health issues, autism, developmental disabilities, to de-escalate a situation. Because nationwide, it's a statistic show that about 50% of police force is used on people who suffer from a mental health condition. And so about a third of our calls are estimated to have some type of crisis event where somebody's suffering in a mental health crisis. And we use a lot of force. We, you know, we use the taser. We use weapons on people that sometimes it's unnecessary. So if we provide officers with more training and more tools to communicate better and de-escalate and know about services that we can divert people into, we can reduce the use of force and reduce a lot of problems that we have with public trust.
Are there best practices, or do you have to invent this as you go along?
There are best practices. And so the Memphis model of crisis intervention training started in 1988 in Memphis, Tennessee. So it's something that occurred with a mentally ill man that was shot by law enforcement. And the community got together with the local university and mental health agencies and nonprofits and advocacy groups, and they came up with a training system for the police, and it was crisis intervention team training. And so organizations like NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, support this, and they've supported it for many, many years. And it's been shown to reduce the time officers spend in the field on these type of cases, reduce force, and help keep people out of jail that are just there for because of their mental health condition or homelessness. So it's a training that has been tried and true. LA Police Department has the SMART team, which is the system-wide mental health assessment team. And down in San Diego area, a little bit further south, they have PERT, which is the psychological evaluation response team. And these are types of programs where they put clinicians and officers together to respond to some of these events. And so you have much better resources, much better training as far as communication and de-escalating a situation than just a typical law enforcement response.
Well, that was impressive because for those of you who are like me and sometimes grasp for words, you did that without notes. So you were able to take all those acronyms and actually show us what the words were. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Eddie Shui, police chief for Solvang and Buellton and a candidate for sheriff of Santa Barbara County. And we were talking before the break about teaching police officers about the best approach to de-escalate a possible violent situation. And this program, does it sometimes get snickers from the people who are about to enter the classroom? Do they say, oh my God, I have to go to this nonsense?
Definitely, yeah. before we took it over, the mental health agency would put on a crisis intervention training, not on a regular basis, but it was very infrequent and it didn't really reach a lot of officers. And officers would look at it, and they were not very receptive to it. So it really needed to be revamped and made into a law enforcement training program. So, and that's what we did. We had two different classes certified by the state, our state certification agency for police officer standards and training. And we had an 8-hour class, and we had a 40-hour class. And the 8-hour class, in about a year and a half, we were able to teach over 700 people in the eight hours of training, which was many, many, many more officers reached than we've ever reached before. And so it was my goal to train 100% of our agency within 24 months. And so we did that. We did that. And we also trained some other agencies, Santa Barbara Police, UCPD, Harbor Patrol. We trained Lompoc Police Department, all of our jail, our dispatchers, and 8 hours of training. And then we had our first 40-hour class in November, and we had 38 people that we put through that course. And the 40-hour class is for more, to give officers more training who are a little more specialized. So they are collaterally assigned to the crisis intervention team. And so they have a little closer relationship with the mental health agency. They know about more resources and can help people get to services like the crisis stabilization unit that we have, and communicate better with our mental health services.
The reason I suspect this will work is that years ago I was on the board of what was then called Domestic Violence Solutions, which is the program for domestic violence perpetrators. And the old timers on the board told me that the Santa Barbara police offices, both the county and the city, didn't get it. That is, they would go to they would get on a call and they would side with the husband immediately. So they began to have training programs to make offices aware of what actually happens in the home. And this is 10 years ago, 12 years ago. They said now the police in this county are the model. In fact, if anything, they go the other way. They don't believe anything the husband says. So I know these kinds of programs can work. And now you're going a step further than just educating the police officers. What are the initiatives you're trying to find a way of financially providing is to have a program where on certain calls some health professional accompanies the patrol. How can that happen in today's financially struggling environment?
Well, there's ways of doing this, and there's ways of doing this right now on a pilot program without costing a lot of money. We do have partners with the Department of Behavioral Wellness that are on board with the co-response team. We have we actually even have clinicians or crisis workers that are identified that would work closely with deputies. And so what I would suggest and like to try, and I would just need a green light to do it, is to take our collateral crisis intervention team deputies and rotate them into a cover shift with a mental health caseworker in the same vehicle that would respond to calls. And you have a certain number of calls for service. And on many of these mental health calls, you have two, maybe three deputies that are on scene. And they may be there anywhere from 20 minutes to 5 hours on a call. So if you could reduce the number of time and the number of deputies that are on a call like this by having a co-response team that would respond to this, you know, you could show that in the long run it would actually be cost effective, and that you would probably have a likelihood of reducing the number of calls to the same residence, because that person would have experts that would know services that they could get into and develop a relationship with that person to get them to voluntarily get into those services. And it's this, along the same lines as Laura's Law. And I don't know if you're familiar with Laura's Law, assisted outpatient treatment, where the crisis workers will go out and basically develop a relationship with people who are resistant to getting help. And these programs are very successful because most of the time people get help on their own. They voluntarily go because there's trust built between the crisis workers that are going out and engaging these folks. And what Laura's Law was you could order treatment, and it was a very low profile way with kind of the threat of the courts of ordering treatment for folks. There's not really a lot of teeth behind it. Most of it's just more engagement, and it would escalate to either an involuntary hold if somebody was resistant to the services or even conservatorship at one point. But 90% of those cases never make it that far because people develop a relationship with the people who are going out and engaging them, and they accept services. And so they get better. They get into services, and they do much better, and it cuts down costs on law enforcement going out, hospital visits to the ER, and people going to jail. So those type of programs are very, very good, and I think they're proven in many areas.
So you're able to retire in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you doing this? Why don't you want to lie on the beach and go surfing and walk your dogs with me, which I'm retired? Yeah. It's very nice to be retired.
Yeah. Well, I've been a cop since I was 19, and I've been with this agency for over 31 years. And I was actually with the agency a little longer because I was a reserve with the agency, and then I ended up going to a small police department during a hiring freeze and then came back to the agency. So I pretty much grew up in this agency. And so I care about it. I care about the people who work there, and I care about the community that we serve. And I got into this line of work because I wanted to do something good for my community. I wanted to serve. And, you know, when we take an oath of office for being a law enforcement officer, you know, our mission is to protect and serve those who can't protect themselves. And so I know that our agency can have a different direction. I've always had this vision for our agency that we could be an example and get beyond mediocrity. And I feel that I can make it happen. And I'd like to give it a try. And I was convinced by several friends of mine and some people from the community to run. And thinking about it, I didn't want to have any regrets if I didn't run.
And so, if you do win, mm-hmm. You're not going to retire in 2 years.
Oh no!
So this is not just a 2 year gig.
Yeah.
You're I thought I was going to do a 2 year gig on this radio station. It's been five. So you never know. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
We
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Eddie Shui, police chief for Solvang and Buellton, and candidate for sheriff of Santa Barbara County. And all the things you say make it almost as if you already are sheriff. That is, you've put all these programs. What is it that you can't do that you would do if you were sheriff that you haven't already had the opportunity to do?
Well, make these programs happen. I mean, I have to, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running, because I know we can have these programs. I know we can do a much better job in the community and involve the community in what type of policing they want, what we want, because we are part of the community. And so to come to these decisions and make these decisions together. And we do have a budget crisis, but we can prioritize what's important and what's not. And these type of programs are very important. I've seen in the past our agency have a community resource division, which a division is overseen by a commander. So that was a very important part of our agency at one time. And that division completely went away. So we don't have that division. It was something that was seen that was not important. And this was the division that had a problem-oriented policing team. It had gang enforcement. It had the DARE programs and life skill programs that worked with the schools, the school resource deputies. It had the citizens academies that had these academies that we put on, so the community could come in and see what their law enforcement agency is doing to have a better understanding. And we still do some of that, just not on a very big scale. And it's usually one or two deputies that are very dedicated that are keeping these type of programs running.
You know, one of the things that's so interesting about this conversation is that we're more than halfway done and we haven't used the word safety yet. And the two other candidates that are running for sheriff, their logos are, "We want to keep you safe." And quite frankly, I feel safe, which is a tribute to the people that you work with in that this is a safe community. But you're really focusing on all the things to make it better, not just safe, but a better community. And there are so many issues here, given the diversity of the people who live here. And, you know, one of them is the large Hispanic population. How many of your deputies speak Spanish?
We have quite a few deputies that speak Spanish. In reality, I couldn't give you a number.
But is it an issue? That is, when you come across somebody that doesn't speak English, is it a chance the deputy who's doing that may not speak Spanish and there's a communications problem?
Sometimes. I'm seeing less of it. On central stations where I work, we have at least four deputies that speak Spanish. And that's you know, that would equal a deputy on every squad. And but I would like to see us, you know, I was talking about the citizens academies. I'd like to see us do the citizens academies in Spanish. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see us do some of these programs that are in Spanish, and so we can reduce fear and show people in our community, especially Latino population, that, you know, we're here to serve them as well, and that we don't want them to have a fear of their police. We want them to report crimes. We want them to be witnesses to crimes. We don't want them to be victims because they're afraid of us reporting them to ICE. And so I would like to see more of that.
And you keep using the word agency when you are talking about your department. I've never heard that word used. To me, it's a department. What is the definition of an agency versus a department?
I think tomato. I think technically we're actually an office. Mm-hmm. So like the sheriff is actually an office. Mm-hmm. So there are a few sheriff offices that call themselves a department. But because it's an elected position, it's the office of the sheriff. Mm-hmm. So the technical term is the sheriff's office.
Okay. And as the police chief of two cities north of here, has that given you an additional perspective on how you would handle the role of sheriff?
It's yes. I think, you know, each community is a little different. So you have to include all of your city leaders and community leaders in decision making for what's the best practice for their community. Everybody's a little bit different. Everybody has slightly different needs, and everybody deserves to have a voice in their own community, what's important to them.
This program is called AHA Presents About Education, and AHA is a teen group that focuses on helping teens, which is really an important issue in our society. It's always been tough to be a teen, but particularly now, it must, with social media, with all the bullying, with what we see in the political discourse in this country, it must be really difficult. Are there particular things that you would do to make sure that teens are, whether it's gang violence to bullying to just behavioral issues? I mean, are there specific things that you would do?
We, the university, the university police department has, they have a lot of programs that I really like. I think that they do community-oriented policing a little bit better than we do. And because they have so many young people that they deal with, they have programs like office hours with a lieutenant. And so they have a lieutenant that has certain office hours where any of the students and people from that community can come in and talk to a leader in their department. Mm-hmm. And it's very informal, and they have coffee and they have donuts and snacks, and they sit around and they can talk about issues that are important to them, that they're concerned about. That's also mentoring. So it's showing a positive role model from law enforcement to young people. And I'm all about that. When I ran a youth program, that's what we did. We took officers and we put them with kids and teens and showed them that we're you know, we're positive role models, and that we encourage kids to do the right things and have healthy activities for them. There's training that it's called Green Dot training that the university advocates for power-based crimes against people, you know, like sexual assault and domestic violence and whatnot, and it encourages and teaches the students and the young people of the community to look out for one another. They see something, say something. They hear something, you know, tell somebody. If they have somebody that they know that is in danger, you know, they can take some type of action. You know, just distraction or delegate to somebody by calling law enforcement or somebody else. So those type of programs, I think, are very important to trickle down to the high school and junior high school level, and even the grade school levels for our kids. The police department still has the Police Activities League locally. I think those programs are very valuable. Peace Officer Standards and Training, they even have advocated some of these programs for kids that are in grade school that bring law enforcement and grade schoolers together. And they also use that type of program for recruitment, because we have to look at recruitment not just next year, but 5, 10, 20 years down the road. So putting law enforcement in a positive light and showing the good side of law enforcement as a career and law enforcement officers in general is really important with our youth.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Eddie Shway, Police Chief of Solvang and Buellton and a candidate for Sheriff of Santa Barbara County. So I just read this AHA initiative to stop bullying. Mm-hmm. How do you stop bullying? I mean, this is going on since I was a kid. Is there a way to develop empathy in kids to do it without having to come down on them? Is there a sort of a secret that you know about?
You know, I have an opinion. I think my opinion is, like many things, you've got to change culture, and you have to have a positive reward system. I'm not talking about money or anything like that. It's just showing that what the group values, and we should value kids that take care of other kids and do the right thing, and also including kids. You know, there's a stigma with kids that may be a little different than other kids, and you do have, you know, it's school can be very cruel, and kids can make fun of other kids, and those type of behaviors need to not be tolerated, and there needs to be a reward with kids who show that they can show equality and compassion with other kids, and
The initiative that one of the initiatives that AHA has been working on with all the schools in the community is restorative justice. Mm-hmm. The idea that rather than punish, make the perpetrator face the victim and have them work it out and have the perpetrator understand the damage that he or she has done. And it works if it's mm-hmm. done right. Is there any place for that in your line of work?
Restorative justice?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know, like the police department uses restorative justice principles with the homeless population and veterans and some people who suffer from mental health issues, and we have one of our deputies in Goleta has been working on a restorative justice program with the city of Goleta with certain members of the community, and I talked to somebody recently that was working with juveniles in North County on a restorative justice program. And I agree. I think these programs work. I think that it's a more permanent solution of dealing with not just symptoms, but the real problem, identifying what the problem is and dealing with that and changing culture and behaviors and attitudes of people so they do the right thing and get on their feet and can police themselves.
So speaking of teens, you watch television and you see a teen stop by a police officer and say, I didn't do anything wrong, get away from me. Now, I can't imagine, given my history of being brought up in the 50s, saying that to a police officer, even if it was true, okay, sir, what do you want me to do? Where is that coming from? I know, I understand that with minority groups, because they've unfortunately been the victim of this type of abusive behavior by police. But it seems to be an attitude that everyone, instead of listening, picks up their smartphone and starts recording a confrontation. Where is that coming from?
I think it's generational. I think it's technology. It's just the way that we have evolved. When I was first in law enforcement and we had to call into the station, you had to go to a 7-Eleven and find a payphone and dial the phone. And, if you told somebody to call you, you'd kind of do that rotary thing with your finger. And now you do that, and kids don't even know what you're doing, but they do know about social media, and they know about the media being very watchful of government and law enforcement, and it's an interesting topic, and people tune in to watch those things, good or bad. And so
how do you deal with today? There was a video yesterday or today in Maryland. It has nothing to do with Santa Barbara. There's a girl on the beach. I don't know if you saw the video. She's 17 or 18. Actually, she had to be below 18 because she was below drinking age. And she was apparently drunk. And whatever happened, the police were called. And the police said to her, show me your ID, because she was drunk and she was drinking. And it ended up with one of the officers punching her several times in the head. So they have a video of that. How do you, and now I understand it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback, but how do you train police officers to have more patience? I know it's tough, but to have the restraint necessary to act appropriately. Yeah. This is a 17-year-old little girl, and this guy is punching her in the head.
Yeah. It has to be a culture, and it has to be leadership from the top. And, the leadership of an agency, a department, has to model the culture. And if you have a culture of teaching officers to not create an exigency, not to rush in, to ask themselves questions that are related to de-escalation, to give yourself more time to make decisions. And in those type of cases where you have somebody who is on a beach like you described, and I actually haven't had a chance to see that video, but I've seen many similar videos. And for instance, there's one video that circulated a couple years ago, maybe it was a year ago, of the school resource officer pulled a kid off a chair and she flips over in the chair. And so you watch that video. And so we, in the training that I've done, we've taught officers, okay, you see this video, and not to Monday morning quarterback somebody like you were saying, but what are your options? Do you have to? Ask yourself a question. Okay, do I have to remove her from this classroom? Well, the answer was probably yes. Then the next question is, do I have to remove her from this classroom right now? Mm-hmm. What are my other options I can do? She's sitting there. She's really not doing anything. So what are some ideas? Well, one idea that we've talked about in a situation like that is, well, let's remove everybody else. Let's remove her audience. Okay. Now she has no audience to act out, right? So now maybe you can get her attention and talk to her and convince her, hey, you know, this is not doing you any good. This is what you need to do. Now she has no audience. And you may be able to resolve something in a peaceful way. So a lot of times when we see those videos, officers create an exigency. They create it. They create the issue. And then it gets to a point where there's no return. And that's bad news when that happens. So my suggestion is to change police culture and change the thought process in how officers view those situations. And many officers have already gotten to that point where that's how they work. It's good communication. It's good investigations. It's just good practice. I know the older I've gotten with the experience I have, fewer things bother me. And if somebody, you know, I'd arrest somebody when I was a young deputy and they would be in the back of the car saying what they were going to do to my family and making threats and you just want to say, okay, well, what do you got? You know, but now it's just you kind of consider the source and how that person is acting out, and it doesn't really do you any good to get upset about it, to create an exigency where you're going to do something you're going to regret and something wrong. So it's just changing that culture and that mindset.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Chrysell, and we're here today with Eddie Shue, Police Chief of Salvang and Buellton and candidate for Sheriff of Santa Barbara County. And you talked about having, I don't know, you were in the department for 85, 90 years, you said? and you said you started at 19. What was the motivating factor that you wanted to become a police officer at that early age?
So as a kid, I moved around a lot. I was born in East L.A., and I lived, I actually grew up in motels. And so... we had moved from town to town all over California and ended up, lived in Berkeley, lived in Oakland. And, I had some really positive police contacts when I was a little kid at these motels. And you know, I remember officers, actually in Oakland, I remember officers coming to this motel. And my mom worked as a maid at this motel, and we lived with her adopted parents who kind of went from town to town managing these motels. And there was a few serious crimes at some of these motels. And I had a few officers that would come. And I had one I remembered in particular in Oakland that put me on his Harley. And it was actually a murder at the hotel. And so he put me on his Harley and was kind of joking around with me. And I was a little tiny kid. I remember that. So that was a positive experience. And I actually used to, this is kind of a corny thing, but I used to read comic books, I mean, superhero comic books and about crime fighters. And that was something that always stuck with me. And I kind of saw law enforcement officers as kind of like the modern day knights that would protect people and arrest the bad guys and rescue the people who couldn't rescue themselves. So that stuck with me. And I think I was 17. I was 17. And I had a bunch of odd jobs, and I'd worked since I was a teenager. And I remember a specific time when I saw a homeless person pushing a shopping cart, and I was scared of being homeless. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do with my life? Because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I saw a police car drive by. And I looked at that, and I thought, I can do that. That is a good job that is something where you're doing the right thing. And so I went to a police station and said, hey, how do you become a cop? And I had somebody there tell me what you had to do. You had to go through an academy and you had to apply, and that's what I did.
You're probably the first person in years to use the Oakland Police Force as a as a place to go to get comfort and safety. They had some bad PR recently.
So the
final question is I assume that gun control is something that or gun safety is an issue that you would support, given your view of mental health and how many suicides, and you know, this is a community that's part of California, but still we see what goes on across the country, and it's really shocking.
Yeah, it is shocking, and something needs to be done about it. I supported AB 1014, which was the Gun Violence Restraining Order, and I'd paid attention to this, and this happened after the tragic event in Isla Vista, and it created a way that families and roommates and law enforcement could temporarily take firearms away from people who are in crisis, who were a danger to themselves, a danger to somebody else, or both.
Sorry I asked you that question so late. We're out of time. You've got to come back after you win. But in the meantime, if you would like to donate to your campaign, quickly, the website is?
It's Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, sbsheriff.com.
Thank you so much for being here. Best of luck next Tuesday. Thank you for listening. This has been AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you next week.